Here it comes. The latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Hey, everybody, welcome. You are indeed listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. We're going to put such an amazing spotlight on the Southwest right in our here in Tucson corner of the world. Thank you for joining us. And I want to say this show is made possible through the support of Discount Cab Company. So if you're needing a cab, think green, call Discount Cab and be sure to tell them that Mrs. Green sent you. I am really excited to introduce to you our two guests tonight. They are in studio with me. They are from Monzo Elementary School in Tucson, Arizona. Join me in welcoming Moses Thompson, who is a counselor there, and Hanato Preciado, a 10-year-old student at Monzo, which you guys have been listening to me for a long time now. I go crazy when I have kids on the show. I love it. It just sets the stage for a better future for all of us. So let me set the stage a little bit for Monzo. They were named as the only K-12 public school, and Moses, you can correct me if I'm wrong, in the United States to win the United States Green Building Council Greenest School in America in 2012?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So I wanted to make sure I get that right. And I don't want to hesitate to mention the unanimous winner of Arizona's Greenest Workplace Challenge. We had a statewide panel of judges and it was unanimous. So you also hold that honor too, Arizona's Greenest Workplace. So welcome both of you. Do you want to both just say hi?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Hanato. That's good. Really good. Okay. I am going to ask, let's start with the beginning, a little background on, you didn't just show up and win Arizona, you know, the greenest workplace or the greenest schools by the USGBC. What set in motion and what are you doing at Monzo to make your school green?
Sure. So the gardening program and kind of sustainability program started about 7 years ago, and that's when I started at the school. And so, but it started very, very small, and it actually started as a student council project. And so there was a vacant lot in the neighborhood down the street from the school that the kids cut through the vacant lot coming to and from school. But, you know, people were dumping trash on it. You know, people from across the street were pulling their cars across the street and changing their oil, but dumping the oil straight into the soil. And so it was just not a very nice place in the neighborhood. And our kids were using that lot is a pathway.
Right.
And so as student council, we decided that we were going to adopt that lot and do some cleanup on that lot. And so, you know, cleanup was done, but it would get trashed out again. And so it was kind of a thankless job. And so, we did a little bit of research. We found out that the vacant lot was actually owned by the city of Tucson.
Wow.
And so we went to city council and got a lease on the property to do, an outdoor learning area for our kids, something more permanent, something that we could invest in, but wouldn't get trashed out, something kind of more long-term. And so we did some initial grant writing, very small scale. We were able to fence the property to keep people from dumping and changing oil. It was a long process, though. Do you know, and as I think about it, the process, it started even before I was at Monzo. I want to say it started maybe in the early 90s. And the process to get the lease from the city was difficult as well, because they came in and did some soil sampling and site assessment, and it was declared a Superfund site. The soil was that polluted.
Oh.
And so, yeah, so before we had to get the lease, before we could get the lease on it, they had to come out and remove all the topsoil and bring new topsoil back in. And so by the...
But they did.
Yeah, but
you
they
know,
did.
I don't like to bash government, but the wheels turn slowly in government, but that they did that, kudos to the
city
of Tucson for taking all the crap out.
And so by the late 90s, the project was fenced but got abandoned. The teachers that were kind of pushing it ran out of steam on it. And so the project sat empty. And so when I started again 7 years ago, we kickstarted the project again, got student council involved, had some neighborhood work days where we got the neighborhood out to do the initial cleanups and weedings and plant installations. And so that's really where it started. After we did all of the plantings, we planted it out with native things, and we were creating a habitat is what we were doing. So bird and pollinator habitat. It required a lot of maintenance, especially in the early days. You know, you can't just plant something and walk away from it. It needed to be watered. We wanted to keep the area looking nice, so trash cleanups on it kind of constantly. The irrigation system needed maintenance. And so
it's a lot of work.
It was a lot of work. And so I just is kind of a creative way to take on that workload instead of coming early and staying late to take care of it. When I had, you know, a child that needed individual counseling, or I had a group counseling session that I needed to do, I started grabbing the kids, and we would talk as we walked, and we would talk as we watered plants, and we would talk as we picked up trash. And I saw very quickly that that was a much more superior form of counseling, much more effective than the traditional counseling that happens in the office setting, that the power dynamic was gone that exists. You know, when you take a kid out of the classroom and take him to the administrative area of the school, that's
the whole thing shifts.
Yeah, it's anxiety producing. Yes. And when I'm sitting next to my phone, next to my computer with the kids' contact information pulled up, you know, that creates anxiety. But when I put when the kids put in a helping position, that's therapeutic in itself before we even go to talk. And so most of the kids at school don't even know I'm the counselor. They know that when I pull a kid out of the classroom, that he's going to get to go work in the garden, or she's going to go work in the garden. And so it's just a higher quality.
No wonder
counseling
I was so excited about having you on the show.
Yeah.
My background is in mental health, and it's just such a positive way to change lives forever.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's
in school climates, you know, as the kids have done these bigger and more sophisticated projects, they own these projects. They're excited to come to school. They're proud to show their families the things that they're working on, because it's significant. This isn't plastic shovels in a sandbox. This is, you know,
work.
Pitchforks and 8 compost bins. This is 14 hens. You know, this is, you know, an aquaponic system, you know, with 50 or 60 pounds of tilapia. It's real.
So
it's
it
real
has
work.
Grown really big time from the abandoned
lot.
Yeah,
but it was slow.
All of those
it was,
pieces.
Yeah, the grant writing got a little bit better, so we were pulling more funding. We got networked better, more community partnerships to lend their expertise.
It's a lot of work to have a community garden. I mean, I just know that. So, Hanada, we have to ask you now. Tell me a little bit about what your involvement is with the whole Reconciliation Ecology Center. What do you do with this big grin on your face? I wish we had TV.
I compost. I'm a docent.
What does that mean? What's a docent? Do you take, if I show up, will you take me on a tour?
Yes.
Okay.
I am an energy patrol.
Energy patrol?
Yes.
What does that mean?
We help keep our community free from pollution.
Awesome. And you had to learn all this.
Yes.
Like, I'm here, Mrs. Green, asking you, what does that mean? So that's really good.
Hanada, what do you do? What do you do on Energy Patrol? What does that mean?
We have to get our badges and our clipboard.
So people know you're serious.
Yes.
Okay, right.
And then we go outside and get our cart.
Okay.
Then we go to a certain place in our school, and we go by there, and kids actually volunteered to, and it's during their recess time.
So what are you looking for when you go about with your badge and clipboard? What are you looking for on the energy patrol? Like lights that shouldn't be on, or what kinds of things do you look for?
We look for lights that are not on. That are on when they're not
when
they're using
there,
them.
Right?
And then we look for if computers or anything are on when nobody's using it.
Because that all takes electricity and makes
yes.
it hotter, right? So that's good. So then what do you do once you find that? How do you, in a nice way, help educate people instead of making them feel scared that the energy patrol is on the prowl?
We give them door tags. There's a green for they're doing perfect.
Awesome.
There's a yellow for okay. there's a red for you need to work on it.
I'll be back.
And can I give a little bit of disclosure here?
Disclose.
Do you know what's funny? The staff actually does work in fear of the energy patrol. I'm not going to lie.
That's great.
It's so funny.
They'll chuckle when they hear that.
Yeah, the office staff works in the dark because they are afraid that they're going to be publicly shamed with the red
tab. Renato Preciado is on his way.
Yeah,
Watch out.
It's funny. A handful of staff works in the dark because they know that if they get up to go to the bathroom and forget their lights, that they could come back and find a red tag on their
door. Isn't that great? Yeah. Changing the culture? Okay. So you have composting. You have a garden. You have hens. You have rainwater harvesting. And did I miss anything? Organic. It's organic. You don't use pesticides. I don't even need to ask that.
Yeah, everything's 100% organic.
Everything's 100% organic. So do you tend the garden too?
No, I actually help with compost.
So what does that mean, help with compost? You have to pick up all the scraps and put it in a compost bin, or how does it work? Are there piles? Because I haven't been there yet.
We just have some compost bins.
Okay.
And we collect food waste in the cafeteria.
Awesome. Okay.
And every time in the morning, some kids like sacrifice the time to go play outside to do the compost. And then there's a morning composting shift, and they dig a hole inside the compost bin.
Okay.
And then the cafeteria composters, there's three shifts for that. And they collect all the food waste. And we haven't been getting a lot of food waste.
Is that a good thing because they're wasting less food?
Yes.
That's a good thing. So that's
and any food waste there is, we put it inside the hole that was dug in. But there's this bucket for the chicken food. The chickens like a lot. Well, not a lot. They like corn, cooked vegetables. They like...
And how do you know that? Do you watch what they eat?
We've been observing...
Are you on the chicken patrol, too?
We've been observing them every afternoon for composting.
Chicken watching.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a new...
And then we've been observing. And then they've mostly been eating the corn.
Some other vegetable.
The rice.
Okay. So Moses, let's go back to what I think this is a perfect segue for Hanato's, talking about what he does. This is what I call applied learning.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me about how you're taking all this, and people might be listening saying, yeah, well, how's that helping kids learn more in the classroom?
Yeah.
And to me, it's like, I get it, but it really
is.
Yeah,
do you know the academic piece is where the rubber hits the road, that... it's great for the planet. It's great for the social and emotional development of the children.
But it has to show up.
Absolutely. If it's not showing academic growth, then our administrators and the administrators at the district level, wouldn't buy into it. So that's really where our focus is at. And so we look specifically at our own population of kids and looked at the testing data that we have. And our kids, the biggest deficit is math. We broke down the data even further, and we can see that our kids really have trouble with number sense. So number sense is understanding patterns in numbers, how numbers relate to each other. And so we've tried to tie number sense to everything that we do. And so with the composting shifts, the kids log in their start time, they log in their finish time, and they calculate their elapsed time. And we have an analog clock, at the composting station. And so that happens every shift. We collect data on everything that we can collect data on. We collect data on the temperatures in our composting bins. So the composters on that shift have data notebooks. And that's one of the first tasks, is to go put your thermometers in all the bins, collect data. And that way we have a set of authentic numbers when it's time to teach graphing, when it's time to teach averages and mean, median, mode, range, all of those math standards, that we have an extra level of buy-in that teachers teaching from a book with numbers that don't have much meaning don't have.
I just hated math. I admit
yeah.
It's like, it's just, oh.
But I feel like the problem is when you call it math and you're like, okay, we're starting math. Like, everybody knows that that's boring. But when you start a lesson and you're like, you guys have been composting hard all year. You've got your data notebooks with your compost temperatures. Let's take a look at that. Let's see what happens with those temperatures. Are they always the same? Is there change? Is there change over time? How can we represent this list of numbers in a way that you can see? And that's graphing. You know, we can take egg production and chicken feed usage. And instead of saying, okay, it's math time, we can say, hey, you know, if our chicken coop's losing money, we're not going to be able to keep this chicken coop very long. So let's look at the amount of eggs that we're producing. Let's look at what's the price point on those eggs. Let's look at the feed we're using. Let's see how much per pound is that. And let's see if who wants to see if our chicken coop's losing money?
And we're talking elementary school. We're not talking, you know, applied math to a high school senior.
No.
We're talking about kids that are businessmen and women.
Our fourth graders manage the chicken coop and our fifth graders run the Monzo Market. And so that's another.
So tell us about the Monzo Market.
So we do a farmer's market every 2 weeks. That's about where our production level's at, that every 2 weeks we can get a decent spread. And so it's completely student run. The students do the harvesting. We teach the students customer service. We teach the students, you know, how to calculate, you know, the totals, how to make change. The kids have to count down the register at the end of the market. And so it's a little green business that we do. And all of these little, they're small, but these little money-making operations bring enough revenue back into the program to cover seeds and chicken feed and fish feed and, you know,
it all costs
some broken
money.
Stuff.
So who comes? Does it become a community thing? Do people, how do you make people aware of
it's
it?
It's hard. Do you know, we're always learning. And so, we're really trying to target our families. We know that the kids that we work with and the neighborhood that we work with, you know, they're overrepresented in obesity, heart disease, diabetes.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, that's a big part of our mission.
It's a huge at-risk population.
Absolutely.
It really
and
is.
And so we want to get our kids and their families excited about eating healthy. And there's no better way to do that than teaching them how to grow their own food.
Connecting them to the earth. I mean, seriously.
And so we want to eliminate all the barriers that might be there for the families to come shop at our farmers market. So price is a big one. You know, we can't charge farmers market prices for our organic price for our organic produce. And so we price match with Food City, and that's where there's the Food City in the neighborhood that the bulk of our families shop at. So we're able to sell our Monzo family's organic eggs for $2 a dozen and, you know, organic greens for $1 a pound.
I hope other people are listening.
Here's the kicker. That's the employee discount. Our kids are running these systems.
Right.
And so it wouldn't
be
right to charge our kids retail. On what that is. And so for those from outside of the community that want to come and support us, then it's fair that they pay retail. And so those Food City prices typically double, and that's competitive with farmer's
but
market
that's
prices.
That's still great.
$4 a dozen is that's what you pay if you go to if you want organic eggs. And so also if, you know, people are coming from outside of Barrio Hollywood to shop at our little farmer's market, they're coming to support us. They're not coming to get a bargain on produce.
Anybody that I know that's been there just says, I cannot believe you haven't been there yet. So I'll be there on Saturday. So that's great. So Hanato, as a you're going to say docent, but tour guide. When you go on the tour, what are some of your most favorite things that you like to show people?
The greenhouse.
The greenhouse. Okay. And I hear you're a basil eater.
Yes.
Do you make them eat it too? Do you pull off a piece?
I don't make them eat it. I ask if they want any.
And who could say no to you? Right? So do most of them say yes?
Yeah.
So what about your... the chickens. Do you like taking care of the chickens, or do you like doing a tour of the greenhouse better?
I like the greenhouse better.
Better. I think I'm with you on that.
What else do you like about the greenhouse? It's not just the basil.
I like observing the fish after I'm finished doing a tour.
Okay, and what do you mean observing the fish? What do you like to look at?
I catch the fish with my friend, and then...
With your hands?
No.
How do you catch them? With a net? Okay.
But we don't really take them out of the water. We leave them in the water. And then...
That's good.
We observe it. And we caught like 5 baby fishes one time. And then one of them was smart enough that we were bringing it back into the water. And then one of them was smart enough to jump back in the water.
Oh my gosh.
By
that's
itself.
Great. It's so much fun, huh? So is it sometimes... harder to go back and like do learn your spelling and your all of those things?
No.
No? That's great. So you like all that part of school too?
Yeah.
Okay, that's really great. Okay, now what about the whole idea of when you have this community? Moses, you have to have everybody on board, from the administration to the teachers. I saw some stuff on your Facebook page where Mrs. So-and-so put this in her lesson today. And so has it been an exciting process? Do teachers loved it, or is it hard?
It's difficult. It's very difficult. And you know, it's a very common experience. There's a lot of interest in the programming that we have at Monzo, and a lot of schools come to us for consultation saying, you know, how do we do this? And it's a common experience with a lot of schools that have school gardens are trying to do some sustainability program, is like, how do you get staff buy-in? And it's difficult.
Because there's so much responsibility put on teachers in other areas.
Is, absolutely.
I mean,
teachers
it's
are
like
overworked.
High praise. They're overworked, underpaid. Don't get me started.
And so actually we're in the process of it. And so it's a continual process. And so this year we formed what we call our Ecology Leadership Committee. And so we've got maybe 8 or 10 teachers that really are interested in doing the integration piece, moving their curriculum outside into the garden spaces and doing more project-based, doing more authentic, you know, type of learning using all of these ecology systems that we have. So we're starting with a small group, and we're working to support them to talk about, you know, what are your frustrations? How can we help you? Collectively, we can work at a group to try to streamline things so that it becomes more comfortable for teachers to use, so that they can learn how do you manage kids in a garden space, because it's different than in the classroom. There's a lot of challenges. And so we're trying to work with a small group to have some successful outcomes. And then we're looking to grow that group and to let that core
make it scalable
group,
or to be able to replicate it.
And you know, we want to replicate it. We've got kind of a 3-year plan. And so right now we're piloting it with a small ecology leadership committee. Next year we want to go school-wide, where those ecology committee members this year can become mentors and buddy teachers and help, you know, push it school-wide so that all of our teachers are using these systems and get some expertise and comfort level with it. And then eventually we would love to see Monzo become like a green academy, where we bring in teachers from other schools, and that Monzo becomes a training site where we offer trainings, so that now teachers and gardening committees call me and say, oh, can we get a tour? And I take them through and talk to them. But imagine if they called me or emailed the school website and I said, you know what, we'd love to do a training for your school. You know, let's find a date where we can do a training for your school. We'll bring you over. We'll walk you through how we manage kids, how we do the integration piece, and then help push some of the successful things that we're doing at a very small scale, but try to push them out so they can get, because this is good for all kids, not just the kids at
Monzo. It is good for all kids, and it's good for the planet. I mean, I just think it has a multi-generational effect also. I mean, I worked with at-risk families, and you're changing lots of things in their lives forever. What about the grants that you write? Do they help? Because I know sometimes, I mean, it would be great to say to a teacher who is grossly underpaid, you know, is there money available to help them like they would get if they were coaching sports?
No, unfortunately no, but there's money to do the projects. There's more money out there now than ever, especially when you're looking towards green initiatives, especially the ones that are centered around diet and exercise, like the health and wellness.
There's a lot of good stuff out there right now,
which is wonderful.
Someone has to write the grants.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's
a bummer.
Yeah, it is a bummer.
But you know what? It's one of those things where, in the early days, I was writing 6 or 7 grants a year and maybe get one. You know, you figure it out. And now we get almost everything we write. And so now I'm careful not to overextend, because next thing you know, I've got
another,
you know,
grant to manage.
Yeah, exactly.
And
which
reporting
is huge.
To do.
And that's the hard part. It's not the writing.
So does winning something like the Greenest School in America, does that help?
Yes.
Was that like a breakthrough? It's like, okay, we won that. You can put that kind of on your resume.
Absolutely.
And people know it's
established.
You got it.
Yeah,
you got it.
Because that's what people want to put money into, established programs. People want to see good outcomes. And so when you've got proven outcomes, then that helps.
It always killed me, because the startup idea could be the best idea, which yours was, but then they want to see something that's proven, which is, I get it. I mean, I really get it.
Yeah, I get it too, because we, ours was a program that grew organically. And I'm telling you, it was like four shovels, one watering can in a vacant lot. And that was it. And so we were able to, and the learning curve worked out perfectly for us. You know, we started off campus, you know, gained some skill sets, you know, gained some community partners. And then now we're to the point where like we've completely renovated some of the interior courtyards and have, you know, changing the permanent infrastructure of the building. But it's a good thing that we weren't changing the permanent infrastructure on the building with our very first projects.
Yes, I'm sure it was.
So the growth process at Monzo really, really ended up working very well for us.
It's almost more like, it's like viral growth, what I call it. It's really changing the system and not just buying a lot of changes to
exactly.
make
exactly. And you know, that's a pitfall. I mean, I think it was 2 years ago, Pima County got the Communities Putting Prevention to Work grant, huge grant, like $16 million for the county. So it was spread out. You know, the food bank got a huge chunk. UA right. got a huge right. chunk. But it was like bonanza. And it was like, all right, we've got a ton of money. We've got to spend fast. And unfortunately, they weren't all good projects. You know, it was too much too quick.
Was yours one of the ones that got funded?
Oh yeah. A lot of funny. That was a good year for us, because it was also a good year for us too, because I was like a bug and all these people that were administrating the money, I was a bug in their ear saying, hey, if you've got other projects that fall through, you can't make the timeline, like, let me know. I've got a $5,000 project ready to go. I've got a $10,000 project ready to go. You give me the amount and I'll give you the proposal.
So give me an example of a project like that. Is it like to buy a rainwater harvester and stuff like that?
Exactly.
What kind of things do you have need for?
Yeah, so the rainwater harvesting is something we do very well. We've got, I think, 16. Is that right, Hinato? Do we have 16 cisterns? Catchment cisterns across campus? We're able to collect about 16 or 17,000 gallons of rainwater at one time.
Which in Tucson is...
Yeah.
It hasn't rained here in a really long time, right?
But
it's been at least a month.
But, you know, the roof surfaces of an institution like a school, there's thousands of square footage. And
lots
so a small rain, 1/1500ths of an inch or 2/10ths of an inch of rain, you know, generates thousands and thousands of gallons of usable water.
To use for the gardens
for
the year.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got it down to a science. So it's like, I know that I can do 2 1,200-gallon cisterns with rain gutters for $5,000. Comfortably, and maybe pick up some tools for the school, you know, in the process.
So that's good. And you have 16. So Hinato, when you go home, does it help you, the things you've learned at school, to be more aware, like turning lights off in your house and all of that stuff? Do you take it home? And then do you have your badge and your clipboard for your family?
No.
And so here comes the energy patrol.
No, leave all that at school, but it really helps me with homework because we learn a lot of things with all our ecological systems. But they help us with reading, writing, math.
Right, all those things. But that does, like when you go home, don't you remember if you leave a room, doesn't it help you turn a light off in your room?
Yeah.
And also, Hinato, what were you telling me on the drive over here about composting?
That it helps you with exercise, it helps you with reading, and it helps you with math.
No, but what were you telling me about your mom and about composting at your house?
Oh, I've been asking my mom if we can start composting, and ever since the fair, I've got some seeds. I got broccoli and marigolds. And now I want to start doing compost.
So you are excited about bringing it home.
Yes.
And your mom's going to be listening to the show, so now she's going to be ready to go too. Well, just get her all excited about it. Okay, we have about a minute left. Moses, tell us about, there's two different groups you'd like to thank. I would love to do a shout out for Sandoval Creative for the great video they did. That's awesome.
Yeah, they did an amazing video piece as a part of a grant application that we did. And that is by far our best piece of media. So huge thank you.
And a shout out to the the cafe.
Yeah, Food for Ascension Cafe. It's on 4th Avenue and 7th Street in the Anjali building. And they've been buying produce from our gardening program, which brings revenue back into the school.
Awesome. So. It's all about local and supporting locals. Everybody, thank you so much for being here listening. Thanks, you too, for being on Mrs. Green's World. Next week, part two, the Healthy You Network, John Reed and Amber Adil will be sharing with us how the Healthy You Network is taking Tucson by storm. Make it a great green week and eat healthy. Thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World.